From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Joseph Horowitz has written a big, ambitious book about big themes: art and culture, marketing and mass taste, Europe and America. It's called Classical Music in America, A History of Its Rise and Fall. It begins in 1893 in New York City. The Czech composer Anton Dvorak had been lured to America to direct the National Conservatory of Music. He came to love this country, and using tunes and rhythms he associated with black spirituals and Native American songs, he composed his Ninth Symphony, From the New World. And from its first performance, Dvorak's New World Symphony provoked intense and conflicting reactions. As Joseph Horowitz tells it, that premiere in New York City was a moment of ecstasy.
A new symphony premiered at Carnegie Hall. The audience is so wildly enthusiastic that it interrupts the performance after the second movement. And the composer, Dvorak, is compelled to stand in his box and acknowledge the applause. When the symphony is over, the music critics in attendance fall over one another in their haste to be the first to congratulate the composer. The reviews the next morning, of which there were many, include one 2,500 words long by W.J. Henderson in the New York Times. It ends with a clarion call in answer to the question on everyone's minds, is this symphony American? And Henderson says, if those songs are not national, then there is no such thing as national music.
Then Dvorak's brilliant symphony From the New World premieres in Boston.
An amazing contrast. The predominant Boston response, judging from the reviews, is, who is this guy? What is he doing here? What does he think he knows about Americans and American music? Boston was perplexed and outraged that Dvorak should consider Native Americans or African Americans emblematic or representative Americans. So this snapshot tells us not only something about American music, but it tells us a great deal about the hiatus between these two cultural communities, New York City, a city of immigrants, Boston, a city where a Brahmin upper class was ruling cultural taste.
One of the challenges in writing about the performance of classical music in America 100 years ago is that you're writing about music from before the time of recording. However, you've found a recording of at least a famous conductor who was conducting in Boston for some years, and we can hear what he made of Beethoven's Fifth a few years after he'd left the United States.
It's an amazing and little-known fact that Artur Nikisch, who later became the most eminent concert conductor in Europe, was the conductor for 4 years of the Boston Symphony. Nikisch came to Boston and created a furor so great because of his controversial interpretation of Beethoven's Fifth that it lasted almost an entire month in the Boston press. The reason for this furor is that Nikisch conducted Beethoven's Fifth differently than Boston had ever heard it.
How do you describe this unorthodoxy here that we hear at the beginning?
It doesn't really have a steady pulse. It's always getting faster or slower. The conductor violates the letter of the score more or less with impunity, with the notion that an empathetic engagement with the music doesn't necessarily require literal observance of every notation by the composer.
Your book, Classical Music in America, is subtitled A History of Its Rise and Fall. Its fall, you associate with something called a culture of performance. What do you mean by that?
A, quote, normal musical high culture that you might find in Germany or Russia is based fundamentally on a native canon. on a native repertoire of symphonies or concertos or operas, whereas we never acquired that. Our musical high culture turned into something with a different focus, and the focus was the great orchestra, the great pianist. I call this a culture of performance, and the culture of performance distinguishes American classical music from classical music in its European homeland.
Are we, in terms of the fall of classical music in our country, are we that different from countries that do have much larger indigenous canons of classical music? Or, in fact, is there a problem that classical music in the late 20th century became a high art limited to an intelligentsia, and that it simply was no longer seeking the kind of mass taste that it once had?
There's no question that this trajectory that I describe has analogs in Europe, but I'd also cite Finland as an extreme opposite example. Here's the country which is reputed to have a thriving classical music culture. The Finns spend more money on music education, on salaries to composers, than any other country in the world. And one of the signatures of the robust health of music in Finland is the importance of contemporary Finnish composers, who were important not only in Finland but around the world.
John Adams, you write both of his opera Nixon in China and this piece, Naive and Sentimental Music. This is what we should be hearing in the concert hall today.
Believe it or not, this is a propitious moment. Something new has happened. If you look at this triumvirate of maybe the three most popular American composers, John Adams, Philip Glass, and Steve Reich, they're all performers. And the second thing is that they command a very wide and varied following. It's frustrating to me that a piece like the Naive and Sentimental Music by our most wonderful and important American composer for orchestra has only been conducted by five people in the United States, one of whom is the composer. Our classical music institutions, our symphony orchestras or opera houses, are still adapting to the new reality, which I call at the end of my book post-classical music. We're at a new moment, and I think it's incumbent upon our orchestras to take note of that new landscape and to attempt to interact with it and become part of it.
Joseph Horowitz, thank you very much for talking with us today.
It was a pleasure.
Joseph Horowitz is the author of Classical Music in America, A History of Its Rise and Fall.